Thanksgiving came a little bit early on Saturday, Michael, as the Noles roasted some turkey, fried some turkey, as they took down the Virginia Tech Hokies inside Doak Campbell Stadium, 34-14. And, you know, this was a win that, man, frankly, I was happy to get. The program needed. I know there's a lot of people torn on where your fandom lies right now on wins and losses. It's such a strange place to be in right now where it's like you can't. You're happy about a win, but you're not allowed to be happy about a win. It's a strange thing. But you know what, man? I was in Doak on Saturday. And after the last couple of years we've had, I've learned to never take a win for granted. So at the end of the day, man, I was just really happy that the Noles were able to pull one out. I know this wasn't two great teams, but, man, I appreciate any kind of win that we can get when you get it. So Florida State advances to 5-5, not exactly the record that we need, but you're one win away from bowl eligibility with two games left to try and reach that. So, man, we're going to talk about the game today. We're going to talk about some other scores from around the country that really piqued our interest in what was a pretty wild week of college football.
Yep.
And, yeah, man, just excited to talk about this game and a win for a change. But before we get into that, how are you, my friend? And happy to be with you on another episode.
Listen, I'm doing all right. I was sitting in a hotel in Texas watching the game and was just happy to get the win. I don't care how you feel about Mike Norvell. I know how I feel about him. Yeah. I know what I'd like to happen next year, but I still want my Noles to win. And I was so happy that they were able to not just win, but to get a resounding defeat. I remember last year in a game that felt very similar against North Carolina, came into Doak Campbell Stadium, and we just said, if Florida State shows up, they should win. Florida State didn't show up and they got blown out. I was very proud that they showed up. They took care of business and they won.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, man. And I got to hand it to the crowd too. Like when we went, before we went in, I was talking to some people that we were with and I was like, you know, I think because it's the last home game and at nighttime, I'm a little bit worried. I think you might be somewhere like 55, you know, maybe 50,000 people at best. And no, the fans showed up. I mean, there had to be at least 70,000. It was pretty full in there. Admittedly, the atmosphere was kind of light, right? It's kind of dead. You know, you would get up for some third downs. You would get up for some big plays, but it wasn't really the crazy loud atmosphere, you know, that we heard against Alabama or even against Miami or something like that. But, you know, again, kudos to Noles Nation for packing the stadium for the last home game of the season. It was senior night. And again, you got treated to a win. And, you know, like I said, man, I was 1-5 in my last six games over the past 2 years. So I'm never – one thing you're never going to hear me do is come on here and complain about a win in any kind of way. But I understand. And this is where we'll start the conversation because, you know, I really don't love having this every time that we play a game. But I feel like you almost have to have this little – preface with what comes with the conversation every time you have a game. Like, I feel like we should just put a little advertisement, like those paid advertisements or whatever, before the show even starts. Like, this, before you watch this recording, just know we still want Mike Norvell fired. Like, you have to say this every time, or the second you smile and act happy about a win, here comes the pitchforks to be like, but we still want him fired.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, so do we. We both feel that way, right? And so, you know, yes, we still feel that, like, this doesn't — beating a 3-7 Virginia Tech team by 20 points at home doesn't move the needle for me, and I would assume for either one of us, on where that situation stands, right? We made that decision a long time ago, and we have had the evidence to do that, to feel like he's not going to be the guy long term anyway. And so it doesn't change what we feel, but it also doesn't mean that we can't be happy about our team getting a win, because it's, as you always say, two things can be true at the same time.
Yep.
But I also understand the conundrum that you're in now is, if one of those things keeps happening, the other may not happen. And so it's really the toughest situation that you've ever been in as a fan, you know, at least for me personally, because you want a new coach, but you also want to win games. But I will say this, and I'll throw it back to you, Michael, is I think there is another different conversation that you have to have, right? I think this administration — and we're not going to spend the whole episode talking about the coaching situation, because we've done that in basically every episode, and you just kind of have to say this ahead of time, right? But I do think there is that side conversation where I think they are trying to give him enough kind of rope to pull himself back onto the job for next year, right? And so I think if he does win seven games and makes a bowl — I honestly think if it's 6-6 and he makes a bowl, I think they're going to bring him back. And so the hard part for where I'm at is, like I said, I fired him in the third quarter of the Miami game. I was one of the first ones to the party But at the same time, man, like, let's just say we all want Mike Norvell fired, but the administration behind the scenes says, man, we're not going to fire him because we don't want to, or we're not going to fire him if he gets 6-6 and makes a bowl. Well, if he's going to come back, let's just say firing is off the table, right? He's going to come back. The best thing for the program is for the man to go 7-5, not 5-7, because then you have a chance to help salvage the roster, to go get some other players in the portal, and then go win some games next year, right? And so that's ultimately, like we've always, always said, I only want what's best for the program. I don't care whose name is on the door that says head coach, as long as they win games. But yes, we do feel like there should still be a change, but also wins are good for the program. And so those two things can be true at one time. I don't think beating a 3-7 Virginia Tech team negates 5.5 years, now almost 6 years of data that we have. I don't think beating a 5-5 NC State team would either do the same way, or even what is Florida now, 3-7 as well. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think either one of these are going to move the needle. But I'm not going to complain if they win these next three or these next two games added on to this Virginia Tech game, because it's good for the program if he does stay. And I like to win football games. So yeah, that's all I really ever want. So, Michael, I'll throw it back to you for some thoughts on that. But, man, it's tiring to have this conversation, but I feel like you almost have to have it every time of like, yes, we are going to be happy about wins, but we also still want the change that we feel like the program needs.
Yeah, listen, I get it. I get it. You're in this weird, like you said, juxtaposition of you want to win, but you also want to see a new coach next year. But the more you keep winning, the more likely is you won't see a new coach next year. But the reality has always been, and it's just taken us fans of getting caught up, is that Florida State administration wanted to see more wins because they never really wanted to get rid of Mike Norvell in the first place. While we wanted to get rid of Mike Norvell, you know, Jesse in the third quarter of the Miami game, me after the Stanford game, like you probably at the, you know, when they lost to Virginia, where whenever it was, like, and I mean you meaning PTS fans, like
some of y'all after 2-10 were ready.
Some of you after 2-10 was ready to get rid of him. Exactly. Some of you were ready to get rid of him after the Georgia loss. Like it. The thing is, the administration has never wanted to get rid of him. So they have been giving Mike as much rope as he needs. They've been tying extra pieces of rope at the end of the rope. Trying to give that bro
someone more take rope. Their shoestrings off. We're bros out of rope.
Give me your belt, Peter Collins, right now. You know, they're just keep extending rope because their desire is to not have to pay a $60 million buyout. They want this to work. And surprising enough, here we are in this almost doomsday scenario of there's two road games left, right? There's two road games left. If Mike wins out, it's for darn sure he's coming back next year. If he gets 6-6 and gets to a bowl game, it's for darn sure he's coming back next year. The only way I see this not happening, Mike not coming back, is if he loses, and not just loses close, because I could still see a 5-7 where they lose both games really close and he comes back. It has to look really bad for the administration to want to pull this trigger.
Yeah, and if you're on the side of firing, you're in luck because there are two road games and we haven't won one of those in 2 years. You know, but again, man, I think you're right because, you know, I'm not going to sit up here like some other people I've seen online or whatever and pretend like I know what's going to happen at the end of the season. Because I think some people are putting a lot of things out where like, oh, they're going to clean house at the end of the season. Nobody knows that right now. Nobody knows that. But some of the things that I've seen are that they, like you said, they don't really want to fire him. Mm-hmm. And they are kind of telling him like the goal was always you got to get to 7 wins or else you got to make some changes. And so I think they are realistically waiting for him to get to 7 wins. But I also do think, you know, from the other things that I've heard, that there is a situation where they will fire him.
Yes.
Like you said, if you get, you know, smoked by NC State on the road and then you lose to Florida, even, you know, under an interim staff as bad as they are, if you lose to them, then okay, I think you could see that firing situation happen. But you're also right. I think if they win one of the next two or two of the next two and make a bowl, I think he's going to be back. And the hard part is, you know, we were having this conversation. Again, I don't want to spend the whole episode on this, but we were having the kind of funny conversation earlier of like, okay, well, it's not good enough, but we also are over under win total for the season was 7.5. So you basically met expectations. And if you had not lost the Stanford game, really, how mad would we be? Because you'd probably end up at 8-4 with a double overtime loss to a really good Virginia team, a loss to a good Miami team, a loss to a good Pitt team. And Clemson just beat Louisville. And it was on the road in Death Valley. So, like, yeah, you have some real warts on the schedule for sure. But if they go 7-5, that's kind of where you were supposed to be to begin with, and you lost to some good teams. I think it's just more like, man, we didn't think the teams that were going to be the juggernauts on the schedule this year were not the teams, right? It turned out to be Pitt and Virginia, not Clemson and Florida. It just the names are a little bit different. So it's a hard place to be as a Florida State fan because you want to be happy about wins. But you also know that one of the things is probably not going to help you get the other one accomplished.
Right.
But I just don't think that beating a couple of 3-win teams and a 5-win team on the road, if they are without a doubt in their mind, like, we have got to make a change, these games would not move the needle enough. Those guys are smarter than that, right? But if there is a chance that they didn't want to fire him anyway, then these games probably do matter. And I still don't think that doesn't mean he's not going to get fired down the road. And we still know that there's other things like recruiting and all that stuff, which is why we're here to begin with. I mean, you look at senior night. I think you walked 18 seniors and 15 of them were transfers. Mm. That's the problem, right? That's so we know there's all the other things, but I'll throw it back to you for some final thoughts on that, man. But again, this is a conversation that gets tiring to have on every show, but I feel like if you just don't have it, then it's almost like you're not allowed to celebrate a win, right? So you have to say, you know, that thing like, no offense, and then you offend somebody right afterwards. So, like, this is kind of what we have to say. No offense that we're going to be happy about a win, but we're happy about a win.
I mean, trust us, guys. We would rather either be talking – well, actually, what we'd rather be talking about, what would be more fun, what would be more engaging, is a coaching search. We would love to be in the conversation about the potential coaches and who could be a fit and who isn't a fit. We'd love to be able to do all that. But at this point in time, we just can't. So what we have to talk about is they're winning. Here's how they're winning. Here's what they could do to win better. Here's what they could do to be a better team to close out this season. That's where we're at right now. And I know you might say, well, this is very similar to Billy at Florida. You're right. It is. Because Billy won out last year, went 7-5, I believe, and then came back this year and then won the first game and then proceeded to lose the next three games and then beat Texas and then lost Texas A&M and then beat Mississippi State and got fired right after the game. This could be the same situation. And if so, so be it. That's 1 year's less buyout money that we got. And also, it's an opportunity for them to really get their ducks in a row about how they want to go after this.
Yeah.
Now, again, hear us say, we would rather have a new coach going into next season. Absolutely. But if they win the one of next two or the next two, then there it is. And that's what we have to live with. We have to live with whatever the reality is. That's what we have to live with as fans.
I think that's a great way to say it. And every episode can't just be, please fire Mike Norvell. Like, that's not feasible. And I think we all understand that it's important to say, because you make a great point. Like, we're all pretty much feel like we're at the same place. And I think we can all understand in good faith together that if the buyout was $15 million, he wouldn't be here. He probably wouldn't have even been here this year. But that's not the situation. And so I think there's a lot of moving pieces of this. Obviously, putting that much money, dead money on the books is something Noah wants to do. Is Alford going to Oklahoma with the AD spot opening up? There's a lot of moving pieces of this. And so, yes, we have this little preface conversation before we talk about the game. But at the same time, like, it doesn't change our position. It's just, you can't, until you have clarity on the situation, you can't make certain statements one way or the other, right? You just kind of have to talk about what you have to talk about, like you said. And what we have to talk about right now is a 34-14 Florida State win. So that's what we are going to talk about. And Michael, I will say, the crazy thing about this team, man, is we're 5-2 at home with losses to a good Pitt team and a good Miami team. The problem is, we can't buy a win on the road. We're 0-3 and haven't won a road game in 2 years. And so that's the crazy part, is like, if this team could just figure out how to win a game on the road, man, we might actually be in a pretty decent place to be. So 5-2 on the road or at home, not a bad little home slate there. I mean, you got the wins over Virginia Tech and Wake, and they were both dominant wins. You dominated Alabama. So this team plays actually pretty decent at home. You know, it's just the Pitt game that and the Miami game that were both kind of that sour experience this season. But it's just really been the road where you've struggled the most. And, you know, I mean, again, Pitt's actually not a bad team. So I think that loss maybe doesn't sting as – I mean, you should not lose to Pitt, right? We know that. But that Pitt team is probably better than a lot of us expected them to be. And so, yeah, man, I mean, you had a pretty good slate at home, and you end it with a win over Virginia Tech. So that's good. I mean, you always want to try and get wins in your own stadium. Now we just got to figure out how to win two games, or one of two games. Really, you want to get both, one of two games on the road, because it'd be nice to beat NC State and lock in that bowl eligibility, because, you know, you want to beat Florida 9,001,000,000% of the time. You want to beat Florida. But you also don't want to let them be the one to spoil your chance at a bowl under an interim staff like they did before, right? So you want to beat Florida, but it sure would be nice to have that bowl eligibility locked in against NC State. But, man, we're going to talk about this Virginia Tech game here, and Florida State gets the win over a bad team. And I'll tell you what, man, at the end of the day, it was a fun weekend overall. Just like I was there, unfortunately, you know, for those of you that maybe didn't know, Michael was supposed to be there, and then he had something that drew him away for the weekend. But one thing I just want to take a quick time out, and I just want to give a shout out to our listeners, man, because look, we have a really awesome community here at Plant the Spear, and I absolutely want to brag on our listeners for just a minute. So this part of the show is about you guys. So, man, this weekend, like, I had a great time tailgating. Our guy Ronnie, who is a listener, longtime listener to the channel, man, we become friends. We become like fam. We were in the adopted family now. We tailgated with them all weekend, and man, we just had a really good time. And I want to give a shout out to Ronnie for his hospitality. I want to give a shout out to everyone who was there at his tailgate that we became friends with. Everyone talked about the podcast and stuff like that. There's a lot of names to name, or I would name them all. But I also want to give a special shout out to Spartan Knoll, one of our channel members, one of our PTS tribe members, delivered us some awesome hand-prepared baskets from all the way from Hawaii, man. I'm just standing there like, I'm standing there on Saturday, and I'm like, man, or this morning when I got home, because they sent me home with some gumbo from Louisiana. And let me tell you what, buddy, it won't last long. I'll just say that. So I'm sitting here and I'm like, I'm having this gumbo from Louisiana and this Kona coffee from Hawaii delivered, you know, by some of our listeners, man. It's just amazing the community that we have here at Plant the Spear. And so, man, I just want to give a shout out to all of you guys for everything that you do. You know what I mean? For the ones we're going to meet a bunch more in Raleigh this weekend at NC State. But man, we got some great people who have really come together to have a great community. We went over to Lot 12 and visited with Jackie and everybody at Unconquered Tailgating. And so we just had a great time, man. And I just want to brag on all of our listeners and everybody that we met at the Virginia Tech game, man. It was just such a fun experience because of what you guys put on for us, right? I mean, I know it's brought together by the podcast, but man, I can't thank you enough for everybody who's part of this community. And man, it was a really great time, and I really enjoyed it. So I wanted to take a quick time out and tell everybody I really, really appreciate it from this weekend and everything, because we are the fan site, right? So we still have the fan experience. It's not just go sit in the box, watch the game, and leave. We have the whole tailgate experience. We sit in the stands. We do all that stuff. And so it's just made special by everybody. And so everybody who was at the tailgate this weekend, man, I greatly appreciate it. And again, Spartan071, man, I really, really appreciate the gifts that you brought us from Hawaii. Yeah. So, man, I don't know if you just want to talk about the community for a little bit, but again, man, it's just shout out to you guys for everything that you do with us, for us. And you know, this show, again, as like we always said, man, it's as much you guys as it is us. So we greatly appreciate every member of the PTS family.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I love our PTS family. They're great. Every time we get a chance to hang out with you guys, to see you guys in public, you guys are coming up and just reminding us, you know, why we do this. I mean, really, it's for you. Yeah. It's for us too. Like we thoroughly enjoy, you know, being able to talk about the team we love. But man, we love
most of the time.
Yeah, most of the time.
The last 2 years have been rough. Y'all are the bright spot.
Y'all are the bright spot of this fog that we've been in for the last couple of years. But no, seriously though, you guys make it so much fun to be able to interact with you guys, whether that's on a YouTube comments, Facebook, Instagram, or that's in person during the games and stuff, or the tailgates that Jesse and Amy lead there. It's incredible. And so we're so appreciative of you guys. Thank you so much. Thank you, you know, for the gift from Hawaii. I'm excited to dig into some of the cookies I've seen that Jesse has shown me and stuff like that. That's just really just grateful for you guys. And we just want you to know, again, that whenever you guys, you know, give your time, your energy, even your resources, your financial contributions to the show, that all goes back to make this better. Like, we take nothing. We take no paychecks from it. We take nothing. We get zilch. We do this because we love Florida State and we love you guys. And so it's great. We just love our PTS family.
Yeah, man, exactly. And so I just wanted to say thank you to everybody for that. I also saw our PTS tribe member, Kate, there. I could see her, but I couldn't get over to where they were at. So it was a little quick wave from the stands. But yeah, man, again, it's just the community. Like you said, when you're going 2-10, you're going 5-5, and things aren't that fun to talk about, the community is why you do it. And we always feel it's important to have a connection with that community. That's why we respond to comments. And we love when you call us out, you know, at the stadium or whatever. And if you say something, we'd love to come meet you guys. So always do that. But Michael, let's get to the actual part of the game that was played on the field. And starting with this, the field was awful. It was a big part of, I think, a lot of the some slipping, and it looked like it had rained for a week in Tallahassee before the game started. I mean, it was just kind of the grass was coming up, a lot of slipping and sliding. That was one thing that I did notice that had a couple big effects on the game, right? There was one on a short, I think second short, where a running back fell down. The first interception, the receiver fell down because of the field condition. So that was a little bit weird. I don't know if, you know, maybe we need to revisit that lay and play turf. I guess it probably has a lot to do with them being a mixed use facility now. They want to be able to pick it up and put it back down. But yeah, man, you talk about the game and you look at the first half. I know it got off to a slow start. A lot of people, you know, didn't kind of love the first half, and I didn't either, but you only had three possessions in the first half.
Right.
And I think when you look at the game, before we get into the first half, when you look at the game as a whole, man, really, I think it came down mostly to you just played a cleaner game, right? Zero turnovers, only one penalty for 5 yards. Like, finally, I said it. That was one of my keys every single week. We finally did it versus two turnovers and eight penalties for 59 yards. That played a big part in it. And again, you know, we got to say, I know this is not a good Virginia Tech team, but we talked about it in a preview, man. That's a team that has been in just about every game, even down to like Georgia Tech, I think was a 15-point spread. So you were right there. They played Louisville by 12, lost by 12 the week before or 2 weeks before you. So that's, it's not a good team, but they haven't just been getting their doors blown off every single week either. Like, it doesn't look like they quit. You allowed only the second lowest point total by Virginia Tech on the season. Only South Carolina held them to more early on. And you kind of have to divide Virginia Tech's season before the firing and after. But only two teams have held them under 20 points. And now this is a third team. So you actually didn't do terrible. You know, it's more like you held the bad team in check like you were supposed to.
Right.
And so that's the part you know, that was encouraging to see. It's not like you walked out of here with a, you know, a 27-24 win where you had a nail biter, right? The game was in hand late. You also scored the second most points against Virginia Tech of the season with Georgia Tech scoring, or I mean, since the firing, let me rephrase that. Georgia Tech scored 35, Cal scored 34 in double overtime. So again, since stage, because there was quit beforehand. That's the reason I say that. For those of you that didn't watch the Virginia Tech preview, I talked to some Virginia Tech guys. They said after that debacle against Vanderbilt and then Old Dominion, that team had quit. And actually when they fired Pry, they lost some opt-outs, but they actually started playing a little bit better. They started playing hard. So again, I think it comes down to, man, no one's saying that you went out and you beat a really good Virginia Tech team. Nobody's saying that. But you beat a bad Virginia Tech team like you were supposed to. You know, you won the yardage battle. You played a cleaner game, and you beat them by 20 points. You covered the spread and then some. And so that's what you really wanted to see. And, again, I know there was a slow start in the first half, but you only had three drives. But, man, again, 13 plays, 79 yards. You moved the ball. Then you missed a field goal from 34 yards, which is like, this is becoming a problem with this whole missed field goal thing. We got to clean that up. But he made one later down the stretch, too, or a couple of them there. And so then the next drive, 16 plays, 56 yards, you get a field goal. Should have been a touchdown. I will give him that. But you actually were down a couple of offensive linemen in that drive. Micah Pettis went out. Then Richie Leonard went out. I think Micah did come back later in that drive, which does worry me about some of the O-line concerns. That's something, you know, maybe in the future that does scare me, knowing all those guys are leaving. You also dropped a touchdown on that drive. You bobbled a touchdown catch on that drive, which was basically the same situation that you saw against UVA with Deuce, where it was just, you know, an inch or two out of bounds because you just couldn't secure the catch on time. And then you had to settle for a field goal. So you do at least get the points there. Then you have a 5-play, 75 yards for a touchdown before the half. And finally, we talk about the middle eight, Michael. You score, you get the ball back, and you score again. So that was finally, we finally saw them handle that. So again, man, you know, we'll talk about the first half real quick, where I'll throw it back to you, but you only had three drives and you did score on two of them. One should have been a touchdown, yes, and one should have been a made field goal. So it's like you did 90% of the work that you needed to do. You just kind of fell short in the red zone twice, which is obviously something that you got to clean up.
Right.
But, you know, again, when you only get three drives, there's only so much you can do in that. And he had 22 combined passing attempts to 43 rushing attempts. So it was almost like watching a couple triple option teams right. out there playing, because neither one of these teams has a really great passing offense. I did not love that you gave up 157 rushing yards in the first half. I mean, you were getting run through, which was not great. I mean, you gave up 237 or 238 on the night, 5.8 yards per carry. That was pretty terrible, but you did hold the passing in check. But we'll talk about some overall thoughts on that in a minute. But, man, that first half, again, it was really slow. But when you look at both teams had three drives, and one of theirs ended in an interception. They missed a field goal as well. They had four drives, excuse me. They scored a touchdown, and then they ran out of time to end the half. So, had you have been able to clean up the red zone stuff, man, I mean, you're looking at least probably what a add seven more, 17 points in the first half would have been about where you should have been at. But, you know, I mean, again, you move the ball, you just got to learn how to capitalize on things. But the kicker situation needs to get a little bit cleaned up. But, you know, it was a slow first half, but then you woke up in the second half, but you only had three drives, which is crazy, man. When you got two running teams with these new clock rules, you just don't get a lot of opportunities sometimes.
No, you don't. You really don't. Now, Jesse, remind me, what is considered an explosive play according to, is it 20 yards or more? Is that what it is? If I remember correctly,
there's two ways to measure it, right? I say explosive plays of 20 or more. There are some places that measure explosive plays based on EPA metrics. So it really kind of just depends on your where you're looking.
Okay. So you would define it as 20 yards or more?
Yeah, that would be where I'd define it.
Okay. So based on that, Florida State only gave up three explosive plays, a 40-yard pass in the first quarter, to Hawkins, a 36-yard pass by Drones, and a 31-yard pass, I think, in the fourth quarter by Drones as well. Think about that. Now, if you compare that to what Florida State did, Florida State had two explosive plays. You could say three, technically. Chroma had an 80-yard run. It was almost basically that. So, like, I love that we limited the explosive plays. It is so interesting because I was watching the Rams Seahawks game, two best teams in the NFC besides the stupid Eagles. Okay. So but the Rams and the Seahawks are in the same division. They were both 7-2. And the Rams had this defensive game plan where, you know, the Seahawks, what they like to do is they like to run, and then beat you over the top. Does that sound familiar to you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds like what Florida State does and what Virginia Tech does. So the Rams decided that they were just going to give up, you know, 4 or 5 yard runs because they didn't want to get beat over top. And they were going to try to limit the explosive plays because that's how Seattle wins their games, explosive plays. Well, how Virginia Tech wins their games is via the explosive plays. How Florida State wants to win its game is via the explosive plays. So Florida State gives up, which I didn't like, 238 yards rushing. I mean, like you said, 150 in the first quarter, they were just running roughshod over you, over time. But then they were able to limit that in the second quarter. They weren't able to get very many explosive plays, and Florida State's defense really stepped up. And then on the offensive side, Florida State was able to capitalize and make explosive plays, right? Obviously, the late throw to Deuce where he breaks the tackle. You saw that. You saw Tommy Castellano gets two big runs there for touchdowns, right? You saw Randy Pittman in the Wildcat. Not really an explosive play, but like he was able to get in after that. So you saw Florida State capitalize. Oh, also, second straight game that they recovered a fumble.
I know. I forgot what it felt like.
Oh, hello. So I thought overall that's what you saw, and I was very pleased with that the defense had a good game plan coming in. They were able to make some corrections when they saw that Virginia Tech was gashing them because they couldn't throw the ball whatsoever.
But I
really liked what they did, was able to limit the explosive plays, which allowed them to really get out on top and get the win.
Yeah, because I mean, you look at in the first half, you gave up 157 yards rushing. The second half, you kind of tied it down a little bit to only 81 yards rushing. Now, I know part of that, Virginia Tech was trailing, so they kind of had to throw the ball. But it's like you said, when you look at the approach, right, we knew Virginia Tech was actually a pretty decent running team when you factor in the quarterback. He was a better runner than passer.
Yep.
And, like, we are fortunate. I won't lie that Virginia Tech's not a very good team, and Drones is not a very good quarterback. But you knew they wanted to run the ball. And even the Virginia Tech guys that I had on talked about it. Like, if we don't carry the ball 40 times in this game, we're probably going to be in trouble. And so they knew their game plan was to run the ball. The problem is, you know, like against Miami, where we had checked the run but we couldn't stop anything in the pass. Correct. So when it come to like a shootout, we ran out of gas. You know, they were able to throw it all over us, score quickly. And I think a lot of what it was with them is like, okay, well, we're not going to give up the pass. We might give up a little bit of the run. Now, you still shouldn't give up 238 yards and 5.8 yards per carry. That's still terrible. But at the same time, you weren't scared of that Virginia Tech offense. So you're like, look, man, if we make them grind it out down the field to try and score, they're just not going to be able to keep up with us, right? We can score faster than them because our passing offense is not elite, but it's not awful. We have Deuce Robinson. They don't.
Right.
And so you're right. I think as long as you limit the explosive plays and you just kind of make them grind it out, you knew that you would be able to score just more points than them because that offense was not great. And then you look at the second half, you come out 13 plays, 63 yards, touchdown, 9 plays, 67 yards, touchdown, 7 plays, 61 yards, touchdown, 5 plays, 17 yards, field goal, 6 plays, 42 yards, victory formation. Yep. So you probably could have scored there at the end too if you really, really had pressed. So you could have made this game 41-14. We were talking about the stands, me and Ronnie, and I was like, man, hey, I know you're about to be 5-5, but I still need style points. This ain't for the CFP. This is for the JOB.
I
would have went ahead and scored 41 on them. No disrespect to their coach, but you're not going to be here anyway, buddy. And then you look at their drives in the second half, forced fumble, and I put forced because, man, the Twins, dude, you better pony up some money for them. Strip sack, which was nice to see, get the fumble there. They did score a touchdown. Then you held them on downs twice to end the game. They had 8 total drives, 2 scores, and a missed field goal. So overall, man, I don't think it was really – it wasn't a good game by Florida State, but it wasn't a bad game either, right? I think some of the things that I didn't necessarily love in this was you did see Tommy's not a great passer, right? That was one of the things that stood out more than anything with only – a 50% completion percentage, under 200 yards passing. But the funny thing about it, Michael, is how many times did we say in the preview, like, you don't want Tommy throwing the ball 35 times for 300 yards, because then in the weird kind of inverse universe that we live in, the more he throws, the worse we get. And this is actually the first time of the season that he had over 20 attempts and we still won the game. And so, I mean, you look back to last week, right, when – we ran for 237 yards, 5.2 yards per carry, and 3 touchdowns. So you didn't have to put the game on Tommy's arm.
Right.
So this is the first time in 5 games since UVA that we've ran for over 200 yards. This week, we carried the ball 46 times to 29 pass attempts. Last week, we ran the ball 26 times to 43 pass attempts. Now, granted, you were trailing in that game versus winning in this one, so I understand the situational difference, but what it tells you is you were able to run your offense how you wanted. You were able to establish the run enough to where you didn't have to make Tommy throw the ball 35 times to win the game. He just had to throw it enough. So I thought, you know, that was something there that was key to get that run game going. We know he's not a great passer. He never was. The thing is with Tommy is like his mobility is why you accept the subpar passing.
Yeah.
But he's just not been himself. He's not been 100% since he hurt his ankle. And so it limits what the offense is able to do. Now, I think, and we were talking about this before the show, I think he looked a little bit better on the ground, more explosive as a runner than he has since he hurt his ankle during the Stanford game. So, you know, again, man, that was the part that really kind of bummed you out a little bit, was just the missed opportunities in the pass game. I mean, you had the one over McCoy, you know, he overthrew McCoy. That was for a touchdown there. Mm. You saw the same thing last week with Squirrel White, where he overthrew a touchdown pass. Like you have a lot of opportunities where you're missing on points or at least big plays because you just don't have great quarterback play.
Right.
And when you have elite mobility, you can stomach that.
Yep.
When you don't have elite mobility, it just kind of limits what the offense can be.
Yeah.
And you know, thank goodness for Deuce Robinson. We'll just say that. Like, I hope Tommy has him on the list for a Christmas card this year, because all the dude does is have 100-yard games. 6 receptions, 134 yards, 1 touchdown, 947 on the season so far. Approaching 1,000 yards would be the first one since, I think, 2017 maybe, so in about 8 years.
Yep.
5 100-yard games this season so far. Every other receiver in the game, Michael, combined for 60 yards. So it's Tommy to Deuce is basically our offense. And the funny thing when you say that is, like, do remember that we didn't have Deuce for the second half of that Pitt game.
Nope.
So maybe if you did, I mean, that's just such a big part. Now, it's not ideal that is pretty much what you got, right? That's not the way you want it to be. But thank goodness that you have him. So because, man, he just goes off on defenses. LaWayne McCoy is becoming a nice receiver. But, man, it would be nice to see you get a little bit more out of Squirrel White. And Danzy did not particularly have a good game with a couple of drops as well. But, you know, again, when you talk about Tommy, if you do adjust for the three drops, his completion percentage would have been out 65%. But, man, I think the one thing that stood out in this game from a negative side was just the pass game looked pretty inaccurate from him. But, again, when you run for 237 yards, you don't need it to be elite. So that was encouraging to see by the offense. It was nice not to see him be the leading rusher for once. I don't, for the life of me, Michael, I don't understand what we do with the running back rotation. It's like you get one carry and then you're out. It's just so weird, man. But I'm going to throw it back to you for some thoughts on the offense as a whole, and then we'll talk about the defense. But, you know, the one thing I just want to circle back to Tommy real quick is, you know, I just think it's where, thank goodness for Deuce, because you remember when JT was like, oh, well, Keon and Johnny make Jordan who he is, right? And then you had the Pitt game in that 23 season where he didn't have either one of his receivers and he just went out and had his best passing game yep. of his career. Right. And I think it's just different with Tommy, right? Tommy kind of JT, those guys were kind of what they were because of JT. Tommy is kind of what he is because of Deuce, right? If he didn't have Deuce, I don't even know if he'd still be the starting quarterback, right? You might be looking for other options at this point. But man, again, there's some things on the offense that I thought were okay. You ran the ball again. You ran it for pretty good. I think the offensive line didn't have a bad game. I think you only gave up something like six pressures and no sacks. So that was nice to see. But yeah, man, I would like to see us kind of ride the hot hand at running back a little bit. They told us they were only going to use 2 to 3 running backs in the preseason. And now it's like 200 to 300. It seems like everybody gets a turn. But overall, man, again, you put up 34 points, man. And that's including missing some layups with the 3-point field goal that you missed early. But I don't think it was a terrible game by the offense. But again, I think Virginia Tech was something like 102nd in scoring defense. So it's a game you should have done good on offense. But, you know, again, you did what you were supposed to do against a bad team. And so I can't really complain about that.
Yeah, win's a win, right? And so the offense showed up and they scored more points than the defense did, could keep them to, and then the other offense did. Yeah, I mean, I'm really confused about the running backs, but we've been confused all season long. I mean, Sam Singleton got, you know, the bulk of the carries, got 14, Chroma got 11, and then you had, you know, Salchuk with 3. Like, I mean, Salchuk started out as the primary back. He went out and paid a lot of money for him, and now he's kind of shrunk to be secondary. Sam Singleton, this guy you've had on your team since, I think, when Mike first got here, I believe. And now he's starting to take center stage, and he's stepping it up. Obviously, you paid a lot for Usman Chroma, and he kind of disappeared in the middle of the season, and now he's back again. And so it's just, I think they still just don't know what they have. I mean, you saw Cam Davis, you know, show up, you know, after being injured all season. You saw him in the game. Kaziah Holmes got one carry for 8 yards. Like Jalen Lucas, the gadget that you can never understand why they don't ever put him in a prime position to be Mr. Everything. He got 2 carries for 10 yards as well. He also had a receiving, you know, 2 catches for 13 yards. Just none of the way they use personnel really makes sense to us right now. And so the offense did it what it needed to do. It scored points, you know, it scored more than the other team did. And you know what? A win's a win, and we'll just take it.
Yeah, I agree. Like, to me, I think you should probably just have Chroma and, you know, maybe Singleton as your 1-2 punch, right? At this point, knowing where you're at, I think a lot of it's just trying to keep the room happy with guys. You know, you got like, what is Roydell doing? Yeah. You know, no offense to Roydell, but like,
To Roydell. You're wasting money.
There's no offense from him, so no offense to him. But, like, I don't think we need to do that anymore. But, yeah, man. And then, again, when you talk about the defense, when you flip over to that side of the ball, Jerry Wilson had a good game, which was nice to see, man. Had a pick, had a couple of – had a big hit there. He's good at
blowing
up. The announcer
called him Jeremiah accidentally.
Did he?
Yeah.
We saw flashes of Jeremiah again. That's the problem. Maybe he was – Jeremiah came out for this game instead of Jerry, but had a pick, had a big hit, blew up a play on the sideline there. So, yeah, I mean, it was nice to see him have a good game. Mandrell Desir obviously had the strip sack. You know, man, I think when you talk about this defense, again, that offense is not good. And so you hate to see them give up 238 yards on the ground to a not great team. I still think they were like 70-something in rushing offense there at Virginia Tech. So you don't like that, but you also shut down the pass pretty well. And I think the problem is, Michael, when you get back to this defense, after the Alabama game, we actually gave the linebackers a lot of credit. I think it's just you are in a position where there are some truths about this defense that just they are what they are, and they're not something that you can fix or change mid-season.
Right.
And the number one problem is you're running a defense that is very dependent on linebacker play, and you just don't have good linebackers. Like, watching this game, it's compounded by the fact that your D-line is okay, but not special. Like, the Twins are playing their butt off. Daryl Jackson can eat some blocks, but, you know, he's still he's not the most dominant guy, right? You know, Lord forbid you split a double team once in a while. I'm just saying. Like, everyone's like, well, he gets double teamed every play. I'm like, well, yeah, I watch Virginia's nose tackle split a couple double teams.
Exactly.
So it's not against the law. I'm just saying. And you don't have good edge setters. So, like, you're working with a – I would call it average to below average defensive line right now, right? Yeah. If you had Kalen DeLoach and Tatum Bethune back there at linebacker, like, if you had guys who could run and play linebacker and trigger the right way back there, I think this defense would be a lot better. The problem is you have a glaring weakness at one of the most important positions on the field. You know, Earl Little shouldn't be making as many tackles as he should, because that tells you right there what the problem is. And a lot of times you see on any given play where the linebackers, they're either not lined up right, or they're not pursuing right.
Well, their eyes are in the wrong place.
Right. Yeah. Or they're just not athletic enough to get to the play to make it, or they miss a tackle. And, you know, maybe that if this stretches out past 2025, and if Tony White comes back, and you read into that tweet as much as you want to, the whole thank you Tallahassee thing, people are freaking out about that. We don't know what it's going to mean until we know what it means. Maybe he's here next year. Maybe he's not. So, like, what that means is we don't know what that means until he leaves.
No, I said I like that. Yeah.
We don't know what it means until we know what it means. And so if he does come back, man, honestly, the way special teams has been playing too, because I used to really stand up for this guy because of special teams. I think you got to cut Papuchas, and you got to go find your real linebacker coach and recruit some dogs and go and coach these linebackers up. You know, because honestly, Randy was coaching them a little bit better than maybe what they were right now. And so that's something that you just got to fix. And until you fix that, and why I say you can't fix it is because you're just limited by the personnel right now.
Right.
And anytime you watch the film, the weakest link in the defense is the linebackers. And a lot of times Tony's going to a four-man front. He's running 4-2 and things like that to try and cover that up a little bit. But the only other thing that I would really complain about on the defense here, other than, you know, the things we just talked about with kind of what you are, from a scheme perspective, the only thing I didn't like was knowing that you had a quarterback who really was never a passing threat. You could have went a little heavier in the box. Right. You could have challenged the line of scrimmage a little bit more, and then maybe you don't give up 238 yards rushing. Maybe you force him to throw the ball a little bit more. But other than that, man, again, I don't think the defense played terrible in this game. Neither team did punt, but you also got two turnovers for them and two turnovers on downs. So you stopped half their drives with stops anyway. So, yeah, man, I don't think it was a terrible day by the defense, with the mindset of you got to just know what this defense is and the pieces that we're working with this year.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's very much the definition of a bend but don't break as much as possible defense. It really is. Yeah. If you think about it, it's really a bend but don't break. You know, they will give up yards in between, as you and I have said off air many times, that, you know, total yards, total defensive yards really matter very little.
It doesn't win games. Points do.
Points do. So it's scoring defense that you're looking at. And so, you know, over the last couple of games, Florida State's only given up 7 to Wake Forest, 24 to Clemson, and 14 to Virginia Tech. So scoring defensive-wise, you know, they're on par with their average. I think they give up about 20 points a game on average. So they're on par with that. Now, but in the in-between that, the in-between the 20s is always – just a yuck fest, honestly.
Yeah. I mean,
just wide open players running, you know, they can't cover mesh routes to save their life. You know, the offensive line of other teams are at least 3 or 4 yards down the field before the running back ever gets to the line of scrimmage. So they've already given up, you know, 3 to 4 yards per carry on rushing attacks. You know, I've complained all season long about how the ridiculous it is that we give up so much cushion on the corners, but then I watched the Rams play this weekend again, and I was like, you know, they do the same thing. Interesting.
They also have Jared Verse and Braden Fisk up front too, so they can afford to play off, because by the time the DB or by the time receivers get to the DBs, those guys are in their face.
Correct. That's very true, and so it's frustrating. You know, I thought I was more excited about this hire than I definitely was. I did not like the Gus Malzahn hire. I was more excited about this hire. Honestly, I don't like either hire.
Yeah, I know, right?
Come to frame of it. I just do not like this defense. I just don't think it's aggressive enough. I don't think it's there's the physicality feels very weak of this defense. But hey, at the end of the day, they got it done. They held Virginia Tech to 14 points. They were able to get two turnovers in the game, and they made life difficult for Kyron Jones for the game. And that's what you needed to do. That's what one of our keys was, and they did it.
Yeah, I don't love the defense as much as I thought I might would like it. But I also do understand that I think there's a little bit of just personnel limitations that maybe are worse than we thought coming into the season. Like, again, man, anybody – I said this with Adam Fuller, right? When you have a team full of NFL draft picks, of course you're going to be good. Any coach – I could probably have coached that 23 defense to be a top 30 defense, right? Mm. But if you were to just give Tony White, just give him Tatum Bethune, give him Kalen DeLoach, and give him Jared Verse. Give him one edge guy and a couple of solid linebackers, and I think this defense would be a lot better than what it is. Because you're just you just have some, you know, again, the two most crucial things on a 3-3-5 are the edge setters and the linebackers, and that's where you have the biggest weakness. I mean, like you said, they are giving up 20.3 points per game on the season. They are giving up 23.8 to power four teams, and at home they are doing great, man. Only 16.1 points per game, but you're giving up 30 on the road. So that's the hard part. But, you know, again, man, we're not saying this was a great game, but we're saying you played pretty good against a bad enough team to get the win. And so overall, man, Florida State moves to 5-5. You got one more win you need to get to bowl eligibility. And regardless, man, I think if you're going to keep Mike Norvell, I think you want those extra 15 practices. We were talking about it before where I think where – you know, you didn't see Sperry in this game again. And I think you saw, obviously we saw Brock get cleanup duty because they're trying to save his red shirt, but Sperry's only played in three games. And so if say Mike is to come back, and I know that's not what we want, but say he is to come back, I think you probably at that point, if Tommy doesn't have the ability to come back, because let's face it, he ain't going anywhere else, you know, NFL-wise, no disrespect to Tommy. But if he can't come back, he does not get that waiver, I think you start Sperry. The second the Florida game hits zero, I think he is now your starting quarterback. You let him get that 2 weeks of practice. Yep. You let him have the entire bowl game to get ready for next year. Because like you said, man, at least by then you know whether he could possibly be your guy or not, or whether you need to go portal shopping again. But again, man, I'm not going to complain about a win, right? I still want the coaching change to be made, but I'm happy that Florida State got a win. And I still would like to see us make a bowl because, you know what, man, it just extends the season a little bit more. And it's, you know, I just love Florida State football. And so I want to see us win games. And so, you know, I want a new coach, but I won't apologize for being happy about winning games and wanting to make a bowl. I know it's not the standard, but daggone it, I like watching them play. So not all the time, God knows, but I do like watching them play. So, man, let's talk about some other games from around the country that we found interesting besides Florida State. So the big one, man, it was hard not to notice the shellacking that NC State took ahead of our matchup. You know, you look at them and you're like, oh, man, they just beat Georgia Tech, like, at home, 48 points. Ooh, we're probably in trouble. You know, we can't – we are 0-3 in the last trips to Raleigh. We haven't won up there since 2016. We're 1-5 in the past six games. It's a non-Saturday game. I'm feeling real bad. And then they go out and they get whooped by Miami. And I hate to even give credit to Miami for doing anything, but they beat them 41-7. They got outgained 581 yards to 143, only 23 rushing yards in this game, man. Miami absolutely destroyed them. And so you talk about that, man, coming up on this game, this makes you feel a little bit better about that road test ahead on that Friday night. And I will at least say, like, you're on a short week on a Friday night. We know that didn't work out well for Virginia. But at least in this one, you're coming from home and they're coming from a road game. So at least we got to go to work immediately. We just have to leave a little earlier. They had to leave a little bit later, but they don't have, you know what I mean? So that kind of offsets that a little bit. They were all the way down in South Florida. But man, they got absolutely whooped by Miami. So that makes you feel a little bit better. And I told you, we're going to do an NC State preview coming up later this week. So be on the lookout for that. But the thing that worries me the most, Michael, is, we're 0-3 on the road, and as bad as NC State has been on the road, 1-4, they're 4-1 at home. And so it's not really about, I've said this from before the season. It's not about who you're playing. It's about where you're playing. That yeah. place is just a snake pit for us. Now, two of their four wins are against Eastern Carolina and Campbell, but they also beat Virginia and Georgia Tech at home. Right. So, man, give me some thoughts on that whooping that they took, because, you know, again, man, when they beat Georgia Tech at home, you're like, okay, this is going to be a long shot. But then yep. I know it was on the road, but 41-7 outgained by over, I mean, 581-143. That game was, whew, that was a whooping.
I mean, it wasn't even a game. Like, no. it wasn't even a game. The game was pretty much, you know, over immediately. As soon as Miami took the field, it was pretty much over. I mean, it didn't even.
NC State probably lost the coin toss too. I don't even.
It probably did. I mean, it was 24-0 going into halftime. It was 10-0 after the first quarter. I mean, it was, you know, they not forget about the rope. Forget about the coin toss. Shoot, NC State probably hit every red light on the way to the stadium. Like,
had
I mean,
flat they tire were, on the bus, like
everything. It was a beatdown, and I get it. PTS fans, it's so easy to look at this score and think, oh, okay, maybe Florida State. It's so juicy. But let me just tell you, I'm just putting up the not so fast, my friend.
Yeah.
This is juicy if you're a better. If you're a better in this sport and you see that 4.5-point spread favoring Florida State right now, just calm your horses, okay? Because Florida State hadn't won in Carter-Finley in, like, forever. Also, Florida State hadn't won a road game in like forever. And NC State, as Jesse just said, is 4-1 at home. They play better at home, just like Florida State has played better at home, 5-2 on the season at home. So, listen, just calm down. We're not saying anything. Yeah. Just saying.
Which, how wild is it that That's we're a 4.5-point favorite?
That's just that wild.
When we haven't run a road game in 2 years and we're a 4.5-point favorite in a place we haven't won since 2016.
I think Vegas gave this game to their junior intern to pick the spread.
Right? They're like, man, we don't even want to deal with it. Just give it to the computer or whatever. Yeah. Whoever, give it to the intern. You're right. But I mean, it does make you feel a little bit better. But again, like we said, they've been much better at home, man. And so that's what you got to worry about. And of course, we're going to break all that down, like we said, coming up later this week. And while we're talking about NC State, before we move on to a couple of the other scores, Michael, if you are a Florida State fan and you are going to be in Raleigh for that game, you do not want to miss this tailgate we have coming up. We are going to partner with our friends at Unconquered Tailgating, and I cannot wait. It is going to be a big time tailgate. We are going to have an absolute blast in Raleigh. We are like one row outside of the stadium, so we are right up front. You could throw a baseball or probably a beach ball and hit the stadium or whatever. You can spit on it from there if you wanted to. But yeah, man, it's going to be awesome. And so make sure you follow us on social media. We will be posting about that throughout the week. It is going to be in the Stadium West lot of Carter-Finley. Mm-hmm. Stadium West lot. So make sure you check that out. It's going to be row one. You will not be able to miss us. It will probably be the largest gathering of FSU fans in the area because the Unconquered Tailgating and ourselves, we do it big, and so we're going to do it really big for this game. So regardless, man, I don't know how the game's going to turn out, but I know the tailgate's going to be fun, if nothing else. And I know we've already had a lot of people committed to showing up for that. So again, make sure you guys check that out. It is free of charge. We do not charge for anything. We're going to have all kinds of supplies, tailgating supplies, wink, wink, if you know what I mean, over there. So we'll be having a really good time. So, Michael, some other games to talk about here. Clemson and Louisville. What an upset that was. Clemson goes on the road, beats Louisville on Friday night, 20-19. Dabo crawling back in to things. Going to reach bowl eligibility because they have a cupcake. Somebody this week that's an easy one for them. Furman or something like that. So they'll get to bowl eligibility and just making an absolute mess of the ACC picture. You got Notre Dame takes down Pitt 37-15. Georgia Tech sneaks by a terrible Boston College team 36-34. UVA smokes Duke 34-17. Wake beats UNC 28-12. Wake is 7-3, man, and they have Delaware State next week, so they're going to get the 8 wins. That's pretty wild for that Wake Forest team. But, you know, I'll throw it back to you because you have the method behind the madness here. This has created an absolute wild scenario for the ACC of who's going to get to Charlotte and will we even have a representative in the playoffs. But one of the things I will say as I throw it back to you is just, man, we talk about the craziness of this season and how does this happen for Florida State, this, that, and the other. We are not alone. right? There are a lot of teams out there that are losing crazy games, crazy scores, weird, just weird. There's so much weird in college football this year. And I think a lot of that is NIL on the portal and just kind of how things have been, you know, the butter has been spread more evenly across the toast, as I like to say. So, yeah, man, explain this crazy scenario about this ACC championship situation. And it's funny because I learned something on Friday night when this happened. I was like, okay, well, you know, whoever wins will still get in. And they have changed it. It is the five highest conference champions. You do not automatically get that AQ bid, no matter if you win your conference or not. So that did change. And it was funny because when I was talking to my brother about it, I was like, well, this ain't the SEC because he's a Georgia fan. And I'm like, buddy, I don't care if nobody makes it. If exactly. their name isn't Florida State, I don't care if anyone makes it in the CFP. Matter of fact, if it was either Miami or nobody, I hope it's nobody.
Nobody. Exactly.
So we don't do it like that around here.
I agree.
So yeah, if we're going to be bad, let everybody else be bad. I ain't got no allegiance to this dog poop conference like we talk about. So
you'll never hear me. Yeah. You'll never hear me say, you know, go ACC. Never ever in my lifetime. Well, let me go back to that Clemson thing. Cause this sets us up for this. It's so crazy that Clemson ended up winning 20-19. Because Louisville had two chances, one with 4:15 left to go in the fourth quarter to kick a 50-yard field goal, and it missed wide left, okay? Mm. Then with 1:30 to go, they had another chance at a 46-yard field goal, same score, field goal goes wide left. Then they get a personal foul penalty, the most ridiculous. Listen, Florida State has been guilty in its lifetime, especially this season, of making some really bonehead flags. But this penalty was so boneheaded. I couldn't help but to laugh in Louisville's face for what they did. I mean, it was just absolutely ridiculous. And now this has created a potential chaos scenario. Okay, so I'm trying to quickly go through this. Right now, Georgia Tech has the inside track to securing its bid for the ACC championship. All they have to do is beat Pitt. If they beat Pitt, they get in. Okay, that's it. Now, Virginia is the second team that has somewhat of an inside track to get into the ACC championship. What they have to do is they have to beat Virginia Tech. But then they also need SMU to lose to Louisville or Cal, and they need Pitt to lose to Georgia Tech or Miami. If those three scenarios happen, they get into the ACC championship game. Now, but we're Florida State fans. We don't really care about this. What I went to look up this for was because I wanted to find every reason to be hopeful for the rest of this ACC season so that Miami doesn't get in. And here's what I found. This is going to make you happy because for Miami to get in, they need absolute chaos to reign. Okay? Here's what needs to happen for Miami to get into the ACC championship game. They need to beat Virginia Tech or Pitt. That's their last two games. They need to win both of them. I'm sorry. They need to win out, okay? Then they also need Virginia to beat Virginia Tech, okay? So you're thinking, well, those are possible for sure. But then they also need Pitt to beat Georgia Tech. They need Duke to beat North Carolina, and they need SMU to beat Louisville. One of those is unlikely to happen. I'm not going to say which one because it's crazy, but one of those. And then they also need Cal to beat SMU, seems not likely. And they need Wake Forest to beat Duke. That's kind of a 50-50 toss-up. So in order for all that to happen, they need that to win. Now, in that scenario, Virginia and Miami would go to Charlotte on a four-way tie with advantages over Virginia Tech, Pitt, and SMU, okay? Which is crazy. Just crazy. Now, in order for Pitt to reach the ACC championship game, they need to beat both Georgia Tech and Miami. They need SMU to lose to Louisville or Cal, and they need Virginia to beat Virginia Tech. Now, SMU needs just the world to end, basically.
Yeah,
they need to beat Louisville and Cal. They need Virginia Tech to beat Virginia. They need Pitt to beat Georgia Tech, and they need Miami to beat Pitt. And that's how SMU gets into it'd be SMU and Pitt that would go to Charlotte over all the rest of those teams. So, relax, sit back.
Come on, Georgia Tech.
Yeah,
come on, Virginia.
Yeah, exactly.
Because at the end of the day, if we're not going to be in it, I don't care who's in it, as long as it's not Miami. Because like you said, all that matters out of all that is we need Miami not to make it. Because I'm trying to keep the 0-22 joke streak alive.
Exactly.
So we'll see, man. But I think that, and the last thought on that, man, is I feel like that's one of the biggest frustrations with this season, right, is the ACC has a lot of, you know, one-loss teams at the top. But it really does feel like a season where anybody could sneak up and win it. And the fact that we're down here fighting at 15th at 2-5 in the conference is what really kind of makes you so mad as a Florida State fan. But, you know, again, who would have thought Virginia is going to end up as a probably a 10-win team? You know, who would have thought that Georgia Tech was going 9-1? Even though we thought they'd be good, man, I didn't think they'd be that good.
Right.
So that part does bother you a little bit. Just that it's like, man, we should be in that, well, what's got to happen for us to get to Charlotte?
Yeah.
Like, right now, the only thing that's going to get us to Charlotte is all the other teams exit the conference prior to the conference championship, and it's like us and Boston College left at the bottom, just having the Tommy Castellanos Bowl.
Exactly.
That's pretty much it. A couple of other interesting scores from the weekend, man. How about Texas A&M and that comeback from, I think it was 30-3 against South Carolina. What a wild game that was. Oklahoma knocks off Alabama. That was an interesting one there. You know, the Bama win was fun, but I don't think, like, our resume died a long time ago, so doesn't really matter there too much. The game I also found very interesting in this is the Florida score against Ole Miss, because, you know, it's funny, I was at the Florida-Georgia game, and I watched it, and I was like, man, this Florida team is, they're playing hard still. Like, that game in the Swamp is going to be harder than people think. And then they could lose 38-10 to Kentucky, a team that they do beat a lot, and they benched Lagway in that game. And I was like, okay, well, I think they have officially waved the white flag. I think we've got a pretty good opportunity to win that game. And then they go on the road, and they barely lose to Ole Miss 34-24 under interim staff with Lane Kiffin, you know, as the head coach over there at Ole Miss, the guy you're trying to get. And so now I'm back on the train like, well, maybe it's going to be a little bit harder than I thought it was going to be. You know, originally we're back to the original plan. Like, I'm so confused. They are just as inconsistent as we are, apparently. But you know, then they got Tennessee coming up. So we'll see how they do on Saturday against Tennessee. But you know, we were talking about, it is kind of wild that I think what Tennessee was only like a field goal favorite or 2.5 point favorite or something like that on the road. It is in the Swamp, but you're talking about 7-3 and ranked versus 3-7. Right. That tells you that, hey, that game at the end of the year, it might be the Who Cares Bowl on the Cartoon Network at 10 a.m., but you're going to have the best 7-loss team, 8-loss team in the country, and maybe the best 5-loss team in the country facing off in Florida State. So I don't know if that's a title we want to claim, but we might be the best 5-loss team in the country is all I'm saying. Which, speaking of, I'll throw it to you for some thoughts on just the rest of the games around the country. That Florida game has been announced as being either a 3:30 or 4:30 kick, and it's going to be on ESPN2. So it's going to be an afternoon game, either 3:30 or 4:30. I'm glad it's not at night in the Swamp, and hopefully, you know, they're still going to show up because it's a rivalry game, but I'm glad it's not at night in the Swamp. So that's a little bit of news there. But Michael, we'll land this plane. Give me some final thoughts about some of the scores we just talked about, man. And again, I think you really need to try and get that win this week, because I think that Florida game is going to be still, it's very winnable for Florida State, right? But I think it's going to be a little bit tough going into the Swamp and beating that team if they really do show up and play and they want to win.
Well, here's the thing. I watched the end of that Bama-Oklahoma game. It's so funny that Bama got beat both back-to-back years on the road. They got whooped at Oklahoma, and then they got beat at home against Oklahoma. And I think, if I remember correctly, Kalen DeBoer's record in that black hoodie is like something crazy. And
I think Oklahoma, he's undefeated in it or something
like
that.
Not anymore.
And you know what else is crazy? I saw a stat the other day. Alabama has never beaten Oklahoma in the regular season.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I just looked this up because my good friend Rusty George, shout out to Rusty George, he is a big Oklahoma Sooner fan. And Oklahoma and Alabama have played 6-7 times now, and Alabama is 2-5 against them all time.
Crazy.
Yeah. Crazy. And Oklahoma has won the last, like, whatever. You know, Oklahoma, until we beat them in the Cheez-It Bowl, we couldn't beat them for the longest time.
Yeah. So hey, Venable saving his job out there.
Look at him. Gosh. Yeah. So I thought that was a good game. I got to see a little bit of the Florida Ole Miss game. And again, the issue is going to be for Florida State going into Ben Hill Griffin State in the Swamp, the Dump, is just like Ole Miss allow Florida to hang around. And when you give them an opportunity to hang around, it doesn't matter how terrible they are, right? They're going to want to play for something if they got a chance to win. Yeah. They're athletes. They compete, right? Kill their will early in the game, then you'll see them quit. Just like with Kentucky killed their will early in the game. they gave up. They just didn't play as hard, and then that's why Kentucky was able to run away with it. Ole Miss allowed them to be in the game. So Florida State comes to the Swamp, they've got to take away their will early. And if they do that, Florida will quit. Florida, right, doesn't have anything to play for, honestly. Yes, it's a rivalry game. Now, I will say, back in 21, Florida State had a chance to go to a bowl game, and it was Florida that took it away. So they do
under an interim staff.
Under an interim staff. So that's why beating NC State is so important, because if you beat NC State, then really Florida has nothing to take away from Florida State. But if you come in that game and you're five and six, and now again here you are playing against Florida, interim staff with a chance for them to spoil your bowl potential, man, that's not a place you want to be in. So.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. You just made me think of something, Michael, and this will be my last thought on the show. You know, we fired Willie Taggart after, I think it was like 18 games, because Coburn said 6-6 ain't good enough, and because it felt in game 18 or something like that like it did in game 2. Well, if you lose to NC State, we're literally going to be in the same exact situation as we were in 2021, fighting against Florida in the Swamp under an interim staff for bowl eligibility. Mm-hmm. Seems like 2025 feels a lot like 2021. So, hey, the Standard got one coach fired. It should probably get this one fired. Should
probably get someone else fired.
Yep. So, but again, with that being said, guys, that's going to probably do it for today. I mean, I'm still going to be happy about us getting a win. And you bet your butt, I still want us to beat Florida at the end of the year, no matter what happens against NC State. Yeah, we still want the change. And yeah, we got to have that crazy conversation just about, feels like about every time we record. But man, it was nice to get a win. It was nice to have a really fun weekend down in Tallahassee. Great weather, great friends, great people around. Just had a really good time, man. Really enjoyed the last home game of the season. You know, we all want a better product, man. But again, it's always fun to be, it's always good to be back in Doak. It's always a fun time, fun atmosphere. And I'm looking forward to that NC State game because again, you know, who knows how it's going to come out, but we're going to have a fun time regardless. And so if you guys enjoy this content, if you enjoy what we're doing here at Plant the Spear, drop a like and subscribe. Help us reach other Noel fans. We really appreciate it. We're trying to push for that 3,000 subscriber mark. Would be really great. Would really mean a lot to us. And again, you guys are what makes that happen. So we appreciate that. Rate and review on the podcast helps us reach other podcast-only listeners. And you can give us a review on there as well. We'd really appreciate that. If you want to be a part of the PTS tribe, it's $5 a month. Doesn't cost much at all. Everything goes back into the show, back into the tailgates, back into what we do here to build a better product for you. If you'd like to take that extra step, you can hit the join button on YouTube and you will find the links to do all of that. So we appreciate you guys. Don't forget Alumni Hall, like I forgot because I forgot the ad read. I just realized. So I'm saving it in overtime, Michael. Don't forget the title sponsor of Plant the Spear, Alumni Hall FSU. It was my first stop on Friday when I got into Tallahassee. 1415 Timberlane Road is the location. Or you can shop online at alumnihall.com. I went over there and I got some cold weather gear, buddy, because it has been in the 20s here. It is going to be a little chilly in Raleigh on Friday night. So I had to go get me some stuff. So we really, really appreciate Alumni Hall and everything they do for us and for you guys supporting them. So that's going to be it for this one, guys. Again, we'll have an NC State preview for you rolling out in the middle of the week. Remember, that game is on Friday, so we'll try and get it out as fast as possible. And then if you're going to be in Raleigh, we will see you at that game. Until then, we'll catch you on the next one. As always, go Noles.
Go Noles.